Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by just each take turns introducing yourself and your role with the show.
Hi, I'm Michael Bunce, and I play Harry Hawk, as well as who was the lead actor in the show that night when Lincoln was assassinated, as well as three or four other roles.
And this is Stephen Schmidt, and I play Harry Ford, the brother that was on the scene of the assassination.
And the co-owner of Ford's Theater at the time, right? On that
infamous
night, April 14th, 1865, when John Wilkes Booth assassinated President Abraham Lincoln. We should say the show is called One Destiny. It's been a tradition at Ford's Theater for a long time. And this time it'll be running the June 8th through the 25th, and then I think streaming through the June 15th. But I wanted to talk with both of you because this is your last time doing it, right? Like how many performances have you racked up doing this over the years?
When does everybody want that number?
It's, we're not exactly sure, but it's about 1300.
It's over that.
Yeah.
We actually started in 2006. Was the first time we put it up for a very brief period of time. And then our regular run usually was, you know, mornings in, in the spring, mostly for tourist groups and kids coming from all over the country. And then later part, we added some late afternoon ones like in June and stuff like that. But it's basically been going on an awfully long time.
Yeah, I think this will be the 13th year, including the pandemic.
Wow, that's just insane. So so basically what we're talking about is when people would come on tours to see the historic Ford's Theater, your show would be there a lot. So it's a lot of kids' first introduction to just the whole assassination and the history of it. I mean, that did you feel sort of a responsibility? I mean, that's a lot of nation's youth filing through there and learning through you guys.
Well, you know, that's a great question, Jason. So, it's interesting. You know, when Paul Tatro first came to the theater, he visited kind of incognito, and he just wanted to experience the average tourist experience. And basically what it is you go into the thing and a ranger talks and you take a little tour of the thing in the basement. And that was kind of basically it. And most of the rangers are really fantastic. Some of the rangers are a little less fantastic. And it also, there wasn't like a script. There wasn't like a guarantee that you're going to hear this and that and this and that. So Paul had the great idea to have a script made that actors could actually present in a theatrical version, and they would have the experience of seeing a piece of theater without paying the prices at night to see, you know, the expensive shows. But also, you know, Richard Hellison is our playwright, did an excellent job, and Mark Remont was the original director. And it's really, I think we're both very proud of this piece, and so it gets a lot of information, but it also, I think, teaches some of our audience about empathy for people that are in his stuff that they read about, that these are real human beings, and it occurs to them. And I think that's really the gift of One Destiny. It does that very well.
And being able to do it right where underneath where it happened.
Right.
Always meant just a bit more to them as well as us.
Yeah.
Right. It's not some other theater somewhere else in the country putting it on, or even another place in D.C. I mean, it is the spot where it happens. So it's just
We did do a tour of it. We toured it one year when Ford's was being renovated a few years back. And it just wasn't the same.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's probably goosebumps when you look around and you see the actual box seats or it happened.
Yes.
The stage, everything. Well, I want to get into the actual 40-minute performance itself, but give me a little backstory even before about who these two were. I mean, I guess first start, tell me about Harry Hawk, a local actor. Tell me about his life.
He was not a local actor. He traveled with a company with the leading lady, Laura Keene, wherever they went for a few years. He was with a travel group of three or four of them. A lot of times they would travel to different theaters in the country, and there would be stock players who were local that would take over the smaller roles. So Harry Hawk, he was always the character part. He did, in fact, there's a story that, like I said, he was the leader actor in the play that night. And there was a connection he thought for a second when Booth, he was the only one on stage, Harry Hawk, when Booth jumped off the balcony. And he thought for a second, because we found out later that Harry Hawk and Booth had been dating the same woman.
Oh.
And so he thought when Booth was coming to get him that night on the stage. But and then he ended up, after the assassination, he ended up in England working a lot there. After a couple of more shows, I believe in Cincinnati, he went to England and was successful there.
Yeah.
Wow. And the show was called Our American Cousin?
Our American Cousin. Our American Cousin. Yes.
It's a comedy, a sort of a fish out of water thing, where Harry Hawk is an American and he goes to England and he has inherited some an English family's wealth. And of course, the other English members of the family are jealous, and there's but lots of comedy.
Yeah,
it's happening there.
It kind of was a comedy of manners, but basically it's sort of anti-British, like the Americans saying we're smarter than you are, even though we don't speak as genteelly as you do. And you know, the character that he plays is kind of makes fun of them all the time, and has I don't know, that's basically right. The idea, you know, people often ask us, well, why don't they put on Our American Cousin? I said, have you ever read it?
No,
it's really, I don't think it would work very well.
It would not hold up for modern audiences.
Right. Not at all. It's not funny. It's a lot of eye rolling.
Yeah,
I don't think they would get the humor, etc. Well, cool. All right. So that's Harry Hawk. And then if you could give me a little backstory on Harry Ford, the co-owner of Ford Theater.
Harry Ford was the youngest of three brothers. And the Ford brothers not only owned Ford Theater, but they had another theater up in Baltimore, I believe, up and down the East Coast. As a matter of fact, his older brother, who really ran the place, was, I believe, in Richmond the night of the assassination, trying to set up some more business and getting, that kind of thing. So he was really the low man on the totem pole. And the kind of the hook for this piece is that this is days after the assassination, and Harry Ford feels very guilty that he could have prevented the assassination in some way. And that's kind of the takeoff point for the whole thing is, I come in and Harry Hawk's on the stage and I go, what are you doing here? I feel terrible. I should have been able to stop it. And Harry Hawk says, let's try it. Let's see. So that's kind of
we both blame ourselves at the characters for not stopping it for when it happened, because we were so involved in it. And we saw it through the show. We relive the day and become other people as well. What happens during the day. And then of course find out maybe I shouldn't give the ending away.
Well, yeah, you got to come if you want to see it.
There you go.
So it's 40 minutes, but so we don't open with the assassination. You open several days afterwards, you said, right?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay, cool. And then, so what else do we see? I mean, I assume you guys are in period costumes, visually, what do we see?
It's basically a bare stage. There's an old theatrical trunk. And when the lights come up for it, there's nobody on stage. Harry Hawk walks on, goes into the theatrical truck, grabs a hat, and he's just going over lines he's hoping at that time that the theater's going to reopen any minute, kind of like we did during COVID. but it never, of course, never did. And so it's basically that. But out of that theatrical trunk comes hats, and I play two women. A little warning there, and there's a bonnet for her, and it's kind of minimal costumes and props, but enough to sort of suggest the character that we are in that moment. And I play Harry Ford, I play John Matthews, who was a young actor that was there that night. And other people. Who you play? A bunch of people.
A house manager. The house manager.
Right.
At one point, the doctor. One of the doctors who, after the shot, went up into the balcony to tend to Mr. Lincoln.
Yeah. After the assassination.
After the assassination.
But it's interesting because there were obviously it's a story with a lot of people involved. It was it was also a big evening. The place was packed. You don't know this because you haven't seen it, but basically the idea was originally they knew that the Lincolns were coming, but they had gotten information that General Grant and his wife was going to join them. Now, people had seen Lincoln throughout the war. He was here. People would see him on the street. Walt Whitman has a very famous reminiscence of they would kind of bow to each other or something, like that. I love Whitman, but that's why. Basically, Grant had become this huge celebrity, obviously a great general, but nobody had ever seen him. So the idea was, oh my goodness, to be able to, and they printed a thing in the newspaper saying, Lieutenant General Grant is going to be at Ford's tonight to watch this performance. And So that was really like the owners thought this is going to be, we're going to sell out completely.
Yeah.
And indeed they did. And unfortunately at the last minute, historically, the Grants said, no, we're not going to make it. And their excuse was, of course, that they hadn't seen the kids in New Jersey in a long time and they wanted to go up there.
So Grant did not actually make the show.
No, but and apparently it was because Mrs. Grant didn't want to sit with Mrs. Lincoln.
Oh my gosh, really?
They didn't get along.
Mary Todd was kind of infamous for, you know, difficult upbraiding people and you know, wait a minute, I'm the first lady, you're nobody kind of thing. Right. And so they had a fairly recent not getting along, Mrs. Grant and Mrs. Lincoln. So I think this, and that's probably sounds more true, doesn't it? It's like, there's no way I'm spending a night at the theater with that woman, basically. And so let's get out of here, that Ulysses.
Not to tangent too much, but there was, I'm glad you mentioned Grant. There was this amazing like 3-part documentary series on.
Yes, it was. And it was.
Did you watch it over Memorial Day weekend? I watched it.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Oh yeah, because I mean, everyone knows, you hear about, you know, Lee and all this stuff up in Gettysburg when we live around this area, but you don't hear as much about sort of the Western campaign and just hearing about, you know, his triumphs at Vicksburg and Chattanooga and then getting called up to meet with Lincoln and then pushing down and I guess all the way to the surrender of Appomattox. It was fascinating to me. I'm glad you watched it.
yes.
Are you a Civil War buff?
I wouldn't necessarily I'd call myself more of a movie buff than a Civil War buff based on my gig, but no, I love it. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
That's I guess, well, speaking to that, so Grant's not at the show that night, but I guess just speak to just how it was almost like a lost moment of history. There was this window, you know, where the Union wins the war, you know, Lincoln's going to kind of, you know, just to finally unwind and relax at this. And then suddenly, you know, the leader of the free world is assassinated. And then we see, you know, the vice president come up, I guess it was Johnson. And then sort of the failure of Reconstruction, you know, just talk about how this one pivotal night in the building where you guys are performing this really changed history. It would be another one, you know, 100 years before, you know, the civil rights movement because of this moment.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It is. Yeah. It is really, you know, when we've done this so long, we had a period of time when we would do questions and answers just for like a few minutes. And, you know, the kids would raise their hands and ask questions. And one of the questions that I remember is somebody said, well, why did Booth kill the president? Mm-hmm. And I said, the truth is he was a racist. It was completely all about total white national racism. And, I mean, and, you know, he spoke many times to people about it, that you know, this was actually the second plot of Wilkes Booth. He had originally intended to kidnap Abraham Lincoln and take him down to Richmond and hold him hostage, because at the late time of the war, it was apparent that the Confederates could not replace all the men that got captured or killed, where the North had literally millions of other people just waiting to fill. So that was the original plot, and things kind of went south and that never worked out. I can't imagine that it would have ever happened anyway.
Right.
There's a story that actually Lincoln ended up giving a speech in the border house that Booth was staying at. While Booth was out trying to kidnap him, he was at the boarding house where and making a speech.
Yeah.
Whoa. And was that the boarding house in D.C.? It was
around the corner from the boarding house. It wasn't actually that boarding house. It was like a hotel down on Pennsylvania and Sixth and, you know.
The irony, if he had just stayed home, there was his man right there. That's funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, also, I'll just say this too. The weapon that John Wilkes Booth used, my understanding is, was first of all, a pretty new piece of technology. And it was a 50-50 whether it would work or not, literally, every time. So that's why he also had a knife in his boot, which unfortunately, what's his name?
The major.
Yeah.
Used on him.
Yeah, that he Rathbone, right. That could have not worked. In other words, it was like just the technology of it. But I often think about that in the middle of the performance when that shot goes off, and it's such a sad moment, not only from, you know, a personal point of view of what a wonderful human being Abraham Lincoln was, according to all the reading and people that knew him and loved him. But for the country, and particularly, I got to say, for African Americans, it was really like probably the worst thing that could have happened to them. He was definitely, you know, in their camp. And that's another thing, too. The last speech he ever gave was from the White House window. And we know this because John Wilkes Booth was there with some friends. And he started talking about, you know, giving the vote to the freedmen. And he turned to a companion, he said, he's talking about blankety blank voting. That's the last speech that blankety blank will ever give. And to, that's exactly his motivation to go kill him. There were other people in on the plot, you know, Secretary of State Seward was attacked, came very close to getting killed. And there were other people sent out to do stuff that, either got drunk or thought better of it and didn't carry it through. But yeah, it's an interesting thing because it's a terrible evening and yet it's a very important evening in the history, you know, in our history, very important. And I think the beauty of this piece is it just brings out kind of the humanity and the reaction of people that really, really knew Lincoln, you know.
Yeah, and people, the common people, if you will, the people that weren't necessarily in the headlines that day, how it affects so many different people in so many different ways, how it trickled down to, you know, other members of the company, the house manager at the theater, etc. And even the people that were in the audience that night.
Yeah, it is. You were talking about just how that shot is such a sad moment, not only personally, but yeah, just historically, it really did change the country. And like you said, the state of African Americans in this country, it just makes me wonder what could have been in those lost 100 years of Jim Crow. And there would, you know, if Lincoln's still at the helm, we're probably not building statues to Confederate generals. I mean, so much could be changed, you know, but it was almost like an apologetic regime that kind of comes in afterwards.
Johnson was a Southerner, was frankly a racist, you know.
And because back then they took the VP and the president were sort of, the idea was to sort of balance it out, right?
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And the party felt that he would be a good addition to the ticket in that he could perhaps eventually get some Southern votes for that ticket. But it's just an incredible story. You know, it really is. And it's really kind of, you know, like I said, people come from all over the country. You know, we get school groups, the place gets packed. They get to come into the historic building and then they get to see a piece of theater and it's all about history. And, you know, it's just, I have spent a lot of springs personally at Ford's Theater. Over the years, you know, they do usually a musical of some kind that has some kind of history thing over the whole time that I've worked there since 92. And those school groups, if they don't like what's going on or they get bored with what's going on, they can create their own drama very quickly. Those high school kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But we, as over 1,300 performances, and the moment that we get to the actual shop, we can always hear a pin drop. Everybody is completely focused in that moment. And that's a real tribute to the writing and to the importance of the event, I think. I think we're both very proud to have been a part experience.
Yeah, and after you mentioned in the field trips, the kids after the performance, can't they also go downstairs to the museum part? Isn't the
is it
Lincoln's hat? Is it the revolver? What all's down there?
The revolver is down there. That is in a
was it a Derringer or something like that?
A Derringer, yes. Exactly. Very good.
Nice.
And, you know, we have exhibits across the street now in the Center for Education and Learning.
At the house where Lincoln died, that place. But there's like a library with the staircase. Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it was kind of designed. You go into the theater, you walk downstairs, and you sort of are going into Washington with Lincoln when he was elected. You know, there was that famous thing he had to put on kind of a disguise because there were so many Confederate people wanting to kill him. But the idea is that, and you walk through the museum downstairs and it's all about his administration. They have copies of the, you know, the Gettysburg Address, handwritten ones there, and lots of stories about him. And then you go upstairs into the theater and experience the theater and before we did One Destiny, it was basically Rangers telling what happened. And then you'd walk out from there, the same path that Lincoln was taken that night, across the street to the Peterson house, up the stairs, and then you, and then that's, and that's, that was the idea of like of the flow of time and the tourist's journey through it. It's very powerful.
Wow.
I think.
Yeah. Really? Yeah, I bet. And it sounds like, even though you've done, you know, over 1300 performances, it sounds like, you know, it's still like you're saying, when that shot goes off, they're still arrested. They're still, it's still glued.
Sure. Yeah. And for us too, because a lot of times we'll, because like Steve said, we did it in the spring and the summer. And so we wouldn't go back to it until the next year. And so when, once we go back to it again, it's almost new again, where, and it's, and we actually get moved.
Yeah.
Well, and it's new students every time too. So it's not like you're the same audience seeing it every time too. So.
Sure.
Well, talk about, you know, after all of those years of, you know, 1300 performances, is it going to be bittersweet that this is the last run? Are you guys at the point where you're like, all right, we've just done it so many times, we're going to pass it to baton, or was it Ford's idea? Or
To be honest with you, I think Michael and I have been talking for a number of years that, you know, we are not historically anymore the age
who
of
we're
the
representing.
That we're representing. Yeah. And, you know, it is.
I like you didn't give the number.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're 1300.
All these numbers.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I'll say this, you know, certainly we didn't say we're quitting, you know, I think Ford's realized that it's time for a change. And I think both Michael and I also realized that it's time for a change. Yeah. And I'm really looking forward to seeing other actors do this piece, because I love this piece. It's one of, I've been an actor. I joined Equity in 79, but I've been working as an actor since 1973. This is probably one of the best pieces I have ever done. And I've done some great work. I've done great places all over in the arena, center stage in Baltimore, New York, all over the country. It truly is a gem. It's almost perfect. So I'm looking forward to seeing other people do it and experiencing it that way.
I don't know. Yeah, absolutely. We always, over the years, we always talk about how lucky we've been to have done it. And when it started, and all along, we most of the time we do it in the morning. So even if we got another show, we could do that show at night and do both of them at the same time, which happened quite a few times over the years.
Yeah.
But we always talk about how lucky we are to be in such a great piece. And because, I mean, if nothing else, we're doing five different roles, which, and some of it's a little cheesy. and so fun to do. Like Steve said, he gets to play two women. You know, how often does that happen? But also in sentimental reasons, we've known each other for about 35 years. Yeah. We did a production of a musical version of It's a Wonderful Life again at Toby's Dinner Theater.
Who'd you play?
He was the leading man, and I was
George Bailey,
and I was the angel, Clarence.
Oh, Clarence!
And that was great. But anyway, so it's, and you know, we, like I said, we've known each other forever, and we still get along. We've been friends forever and a day. So it's gonna. I mean, it is bittersweet. Is the right word? I mean, I actually thought, you know, I got the call saying, you know, you guys aren't doing it anymore. And I thought, okay, well, maybe it's time. I mean, it's been 13 years, you know, it's a long time, but it is, so many good things have come out of it and doing it, et cetera, that, it's been great.
That's hilarious that you guys did. It's Harry Hawk and Harry Ford, and then you got Harry Bailey, Harry.
Exactly. Yes, he does all the Harrys.
Jason, you are up on your movies, buddy.
The Trouble with Harry. Now that's a whole different. The two Harrys, you guys. Or sorry, you were going to say something.
I was just going to say that, you know, we love each other. We really do. And, you know, how lucky are we that we are doing this piece with the same person that we love all these years? Because, you know, that's a very important part of a lot of famous or infamous matchings of actors, and they can't stand each other off the stage, you know.
And having to do it for so long together.
Yeah. But it's really, it is remarkable. And, you know, it's, I was telling you about Q&As. One of my favorite questions I ever got was this little girl kind of timidly raised her hand. I remember specifically that her feet did not touch the ground when she was sitting in her seat.
Wow.
And she goes, well, whatever happened to Mrs. Lincoln? And I love that question because I know that that little girl, and I gave her an answer, but I also said, no, I want you to find out more information about Mary Todd because she's a very interesting human being, had a really rough time of things.
Lost children and yeah, all that kind of
stuff. Yeah, and you should learn more about her. But to me, that speaks to the genius of this piece in that you see the whole thing through the eyes of human beings. They are just reacting emotionally to a situation. You know, they knew Lincoln in some way. They were in the building and all that stuff. And I think that it is a kind of piece that makes young people be more interested in history.
Inspires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think. And that is, you know, we need all of our students to understand history so that we don't repeat any of the bad stuff that we've gone through in the past.
Isn't that the truth? It is sick. It is cyclical. What is it? History doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. So we need to.
Yes.
You don't know it, you're doomed to repeat it. All those, you know, all those catchphrases.
Yeah.
Well, before we run, I don't want to sound too transcendent or spiritual or whatever, but do you ever feel like there's the ghost of Lincoln or if he was somehow watching or I don't know, if didn't get to whatever, but you know what I mean? Like, do you ever feel like there's that weight of him watching and you owe it to the man himself to get it right?
That's a great question.
Yes. I mean, and a lot of it, because it is right there as well. And like I said too, because, you know, we'll do it on and off. And sometimes, and even just like the last time we recorded it over the pandemic, where there was so much feeling there because we hadn't done it in a couple of years, and we were back doing theater again, which we hadn't done in a few years.
Yeah.
And there's always Lincoln's connection to the theater. I mean, he would go to the theater all the time. He was always quoting Shakespeare wherever he went. Apparently, his assistant would have to say, "Please, no more." But there's his connections to the theater as well as him being there, as him being dead. There's so many connections to it. I mean, we don't see him walking down the aisle or anything like that.
There's a lot, it's funny, people talk about ghosts and all that stuff. I don't think there's any ghosts I haven't ever experienced one in Ford's Theater, and I've spent more time than most people.
Only at a Christmas Carol. That's the only time.
Exactly.
Nice. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Nice.
By the way, I'll be playing Marley again this Christmas Carol. So
nice. Shout out to, what is it, Craig Wallace.
But I wanted to say that I have worked so often at Ford's over the years. I've been so fortunate. And I think because I've been doing this for so long, I often think, I wonder what Abraham Lincoln would think about what's on the stage in this moment.
Yeah.
So, for example, when we did Ragtime, I don't know if you got to see Ragtime, but it was a really great production.
It was amazing.
And I like, oh man, I wish that he could see this. He would so much love this. And even Grace, they just did Grace. And I thought, oh my God, Abraham Lincoln would love that piece. Right. You know what I mean? And so that always comes into my mind whenever we're putting on something new or something. I wonder, I would love to know what his reaction would be to that. So,
right.
Yeah, you know, that's my take on it.
Sure. Anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it sounds great, and I appreciate you both of you for joining us. And congrats on a long, long, successful run.
Thank you very much.
1,300 performances. I mean, that's quite a legacy.
Yeah, crazy.
Right it probably will
hit us as soon as it's done. That we're like, oh my God, it really is. That hit us a little bit more,
right?
Than just knowing it. So
it's going to be done again. And as I would recommend anybody who hasn't seen it and hasn't seen us in it, by all means, next year it'll still be there. And I'm sure that it'll be fantastic.
And we've actually just heard rumors of who might be doing it.
Yeah.
And they're great. They really are great.
Are we allowed to share that? Are we allowed to get a little?
I don't think
it's
just a rumor.
I think they have ideas about who they want to ask, but I don't think they've asked them yet.
And it's always been over the years, you know, the younger guys will be doing Christmas Carol or something with the younger guys, and they'll be like, okay, we're taking over from you guys.
Yeah.
It's been happening forever. So, and it's not the same ones.
Right. Well, yeah, if they haven't even notified the people, they probably don't want to be listening to this and say, wait, I am?
Yeah, exactly.
So, no, yeah. We'll let Ford's make the announcement. But for now, come see you guys. I mean, the two of you is going to be great. Again, it is One Destiny in person, June 8th through the 25th, and I think streaming through the 15th as well. Head over to Fords.org to find out all your ticket information. And thanks for joining us. I can tell you guys get along. And like you said, for that many performances, you have to get along
Thankfully, lucky. Thank you, Jason. Thank
I
you
really, really appreciate it. This was fun.
No problem. Thank you very much.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
All right, bye. Bye.